From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica Radio stations and affiliates nationwide. Thousands of asylum seekers, largely from Central American nations, are being held in camps just across the U.S. border in Mexico, a phenomenon that is the direct result of President Donald Trump's harsh anti-immigrant policies. With little media coverage of the people being affected, the immigration crisis at the border is largely out of sight and out of mind. Covering this humanitarian catastrophe with direct reporting is our correspondent Arun Gupta, who has spent a few days gathering the stories and images of asylum seekers shut out of the U.S. He now joins me from near the border. Arun Gupta is an investigative journalist who has written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, and Raw Story. And his forthcoming book is Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction. Hi, Arun.
It's good to be with you today, Sonali.
Tell me where you are right now.
I am in Matamoros, Mexico. I am right across the border from Brownsville, Texas. Folks can see tents behind me. This image is just a tiny slice of a small city. There's 2,200 migrants here from all over Central America, Southern Mexico, the Americas, indeed, people from all over the world. Are coming through here, and they have been forced to basically live here, to stop here, because of Trump's illegal Mexican protection protocols, which is known as the Remain in Mexico policy, that has seen 56,000 migrants forced to stay in border cities along the U.S.-Mexico border on the Mexico side, often in dangerous and deadly conditions. This includes 15,000 children, and these are all asylum seekers who, up until last year, when the Remain in Mexico policy was put into effect, they would have been allowed to come over the border because under U.S. law, they're allowed to present their case that they have a credible fear of persecution or violence, and they're allowed to stay while their case is adjudicated. And remember, this comes out of, you know, the Holocaust, essentially. So now they've been forced back to Mexico, which is, and so we're in one of the seven border cities.
So you mentioned that there are people from all over the world. I understand a majority are Central American, but there are people even from outside the continent who would ordinarily be attempting to enter the U.S. through Mexico and who are now stuck in Mexico, right? Can you give me a sense of the stories of people that you've gathered, where they're from, what has brought them to try to enter the U.S., and how they've been surviving those harsh conditions?
Yeah, so we've talked to, so far, people from southern Mexico, Honduras, and Cuba. The ones from the Central America and Mexico, every single one of them, and we've talked to five different families, it's directly because of cartel violence, you know, people who are being threatened with violence. We talked to one woman from Michoacan, who the father of her children were killed by cartels in front of her children, in front of their school. This is the type of stuff that's going on. Then we just interviewed families from Honduras who they had to flee because of the threat of gang violence. A number of their family members had been killed by gangs. They have a teenage son. The gangs came up to him on the street and said, "Are you ready?" And what they meant is, "Are you ready to join us?" And he said if he didn't join them, they would kill him. And then they finally decided to leave in May of 2019 when the father of the children, the couple isn't married, his aunt and uncle were killed by gangs. And he's lost numerous relatives to gangs. He has an adopted father who does basically has an anti-gang program. He's a pastor, and so he helps people leave gangs. And so his extended family has been targeted for precisely that reason. And he said he's lost something like seven family members. And so they just finally decided they had to leave or they were going to be killed. And you know what's fueling this is the U.S. appetite for illegal drugs. It's also the U.S. forcing these countries to participate in the drug war, and that's on top of the decades of economic war, of destabilization, of coups, of the Central American wars that has really shattered these countries as a safe functioning civil societies for the people, and have turned them into essentially these narco states. We talked to one researcher from Stanford who's down here, and he said it's not that these states are failing like Mexico. He said these states are very strong. It's just that they're in the wrong hands.
Arun, how are people surviving conditions at the border? These are people who are already vulnerable, having left their home countries, essentially fleeing this gang violence. They presumably have little more than the clothes on their back or whatever they can carry with them. How are they surviving? Where are the tents coming from? Do they have blankets in the winter weather, food, medication, healthcare?
Well, you know, the other side of this is just this really inspiring story of activists from both sides of the border. A lot of people from the U.S. are coming down in Brownsville, which is literally feet from Matamoros. There's this growing movement here, and we've been meeting people from all over the country who are coming down to help give aid to the migrants. So they are purchasing tents, sleeping bags, everything you can imagine, clothes, shoes. You know, in a way, it reminds me of Occupy Wall Street. You know, that we saw these essentially free stores. They even called them free stores, like in Occupy, that are full of like bedrolls and blankets. You see women coming up to them to get diapers, and you know, in this camp of like some 2,000 people, there are over 500 children, and it's just heartbreaking. You see all these little kids running around, and so many of these families, you know, they don't the wives the women don't have a husband or a partner because they were killed, you know. And these are the rapists, drug dealers, and criminals that Donald Trump loves to talk about. So, you know, it's heartbreaking, but things are not so bad in Matamoros in particular. A lot of the other border regions, it's far more dangerous, like Ciudad, which is across from El Paso, or Reynosa, which is across from McAllen, Texas. There you have actual like open cartel battles. Here we've actually been told by multiple people part of the reason it's safer is because the cartel is essentially protecting its turf. That with these thousands of migrants on the Mexico side and all this money coming in from the U.S. side, so you have civil society. We met all these members of a synagogue, a social justice synagogue from Washington, D.C., who flew down here, something like 16 of them, to prepare meals, and they're paying for the meals themselves. They also hired a restaurant in Matamoros to provide a meal for 1,000 people. And so this is pumping money into the local economy. And there's some migrants here. You know, it's from all sectors of society people are fleeing. You're finding peasants, working class, but you're also finding middle class. We've been told there's doctors, engineers, lawyers who are here. And, you know, some people will rent houses. So there's all this money being pumped into the local economy, and the cartel is getting its slice of that. And that's the thing, you know, one of the stories that's not really getting out is how the cartels, the narco-trafficantes, work hand in hand with the Mexican government, the police, the military. It is in many ways a corrupt narco state. And so they're essentially protecting their economic turf. And so conditions have gotten somewhat better here, but it's still, in essence, a refugee camp.
So the Mexican government, which under, you know, the new-ish President AMLO, Andrés Manuel López Obrador, you know, you're saying that they're continuing to work essentially maybe more at the local level than the federal level with these narco traffickers. Has there been any formal Mexican government presence in Matamoros?
There is, but you know, what's essentially going on is this is being dumped on civil society, and people recognize what's going on. There's a woman here, Felicia from Houston, Texas. She's moved down here, and she runs what's called a sidewalk school, and we're going to visit it later today. And the Mexican government has given her this little patch of sidewalk, but what was explained to us by some of these researchers, if they were actually declared refugees, then all sorts of responsibilities and obligations and laws would kick in on the U.S. government and the Mexico government. So, you know, the UN High Commission for Refugees, we were told, has been around here, but they can't come in until they've been declared refugees. And if the UN was able to come in, then you would see like schools, you would see better housing. You would see healthcare. There is an NGO doing healthcare here. They essentially have like a clinic and these little like a hospital, like these pods where they can do somewhat more complicated procedures, actual surgery. They are sent to hospitals in Matamoros, and so civil society is taking all this up. And so, but when Felicia was talking about it, the school, she said, you know, it's wrong that this has to happen, that we're doing this, but it's also absolutely necessary. And but this is a way that the state can then basically privatize these resources. And these are, you know, essentially a stateless people, but they're even in worse condition than the Palestinians, because at least with the Palestinians, they were declared refugees, and so certain rights and responsibilities did kick in terms of their daily conditions. And so what we're seeing is a new type of space being created, of it's like basically a stateless non-people, and it's happening all over the world, right? This is happening in Europe, this is happening in China, in India, in Australia, you know, what's going on in Libya with these camps that people are being forced to. So this is kind of this horrible new world that ended up being. But people are very grateful to be here because they say we're safer. We're safe from the violence that was affecting us. But some people also say we're not completely safe. You know, that the cartels can come up and threaten them.
So, Arun, what is the status of the cases that these people are hoping to have adjudicated? Presumably, they're there because they are trying to apply for asylum in the United States. Are many of these folks, have they started their processes? How do they find out about the status of their cases? Or are they even prevented from applying until there's space for them to apply?
Yeah, let me start out by making a historical point. You know, the right wing media has very successfully portrayed itself as like, oh, we're against crime, when in fact they are nothing but a giant criminal enterprise. Because everything the Trump administration is doing in terms of the asylum seekers is completely illegal under U.S. law. You are supposed to be able to present yourself at the border and say, I have a fear of persecution or violence. Your case is then an intake officer examines your case, and until the Remain in Mexico policy was put into place, I think something like 40% or more the asylum officers who are trained to do this were saying you have a credible fear of persecution, and there was a lot of problems with that process. Now we're seeing virtually no one is being given a credible fear of persecution because they've also turned over this function to the Border Patrol, who are not trained to do this. And they're basically denying everyone. And so what we've heard is 10,000 people have tried to go through the asylum process, and 0.1%, only 11 people have gotten asylum because they just keep throwing up all these roadblocks. And there's these tent courts that are actually, I can see just across the Rio Grande. And, you know, I should also add that we're just standing down stream where there was that heartbreaking photo of Oscar Rivera and Valeria, where their bodies washed up on the
The
U.S.
father
side.
and his daughter, yeah.
from El Salvador who tried to cross. You know, we're just downstream from that. And right across from us are the tent courts where, you know, the organizers who are trying to bring attention to the Remain in Mexico policy, they say these are sham courts. This is where injustice is given out, that they're just rushing people through the process and forcing them back into Mexico. And we were told that there's a case of one man who actually was given asylum and that he was forced back to Mexico because the government was going to appeal. All of this is completely illegal. All of it is completely criminal, but the Trump administration knows they can get away with it because they can tie it up with in court for years and because they're stacking the judiciary now as well.
So you also are in or near, right near Brownsville, Texas, because this is the border with Texas and Mexico, where the governor of Texas has announced that he will, using an authority that he claims from the Trump administration's executive order, is going to refuse refugees from being able to settle in Texas. These are people whose asylum claims have been accepted, and even those. So these are supposedly people who've gone through the extreme vetting process that the Trump administration is claiming it's put in place. And even those people are apparently not good enough for the governor of Texas.
Yeah, well, you know, and that's an important story. But we also have to remember that the Trump administration in the last fiscal year of the Obama administration, I believe it was fiscal year 2017, something like 117,000 refugees were admitted into the United States, including some a little over 10,000 Syrian refugees. Now, that was just a drop in the bucket, right? Germany said they would take 1 million, and people were pushing the Obama administration to accept 100,000. In 2018, it was down to two refugees. The number, the cap is now down to 18,000, which actually, again, I believe is in violation of the U.S. law that Congress put a minimum cap of something like 50,000. So now they put it down to 18,000, and that's the cap. They can accept far less, and they've also been basically making clear that they want to accept white people, Europeans. You know, Donald Trump, is he wants people from Norway to come here, of course. Not that anyone from Norway wants to come to the United States. So, you know, it may be refusing, and, you know, that's part of the xenophobia and racism and white nationalism that we see has now become the guiding ideology of the Republican Party, refusing to let immigrants in a state. But the real story is how, like, no refugees, or virtually no refugees, are being allowed in anymore.
Arun, I want to ask you a little bit more about the tent courts, where, you know, which is something we've heard a little bit about, but not nearly enough. Is the public able to go into these courts? How do you see what's actually happening in these courts, and how are they run?
Well, so this is a lot of confusion. Like, you know, we did try and get in this morning, but we were turned away. We were told they were full. So we're going to try and get in tomorrow morning. We talked to people who said it was just announced that they were going to be open to the public. But what we were told is the only things that are being open to the public are where it's basically the calendar hearings, where they're telling people to come back on a certain date, that they're not allowed to see the actual process. And, you know, just like only 1% of 0.1% of people are getting their asylum claims approved, it's also an appallingly low number. I think less than 1% who have legal representation. And these are like telecourts, right? You know, the judges are being Skyped in from elsewhere, and they're just doing these mass hearings where they're denying people's claims. And what they're trying to do is reduce this process that used to take 2 or 3 or 4 years down to 10 days to force people back to Mexico. This policy is so extreme. So, you know, there's actually the northern part of this little city is a little Mexico, where there's all these refugees, asylum seekers from southern Mexico. And the U.S. has an agreement with Guatemala to even send Mexican refugees to Guatemala, one of the most dangerous countries in the hemisphere. And Mexico said they weren't going to participate in this, but one of these experts we've talked to pointed out, like, Mexico doesn't have any say. They can say they're not going to participate, but this agreement is between the U.S. and the government of Guatemala. So we may actually even see like refugees from southern Mexico being sent to northern Guatemala, which is under the control of the Zeta cartel. So, you know, this is really a story about how the US government is essentially strengthening these cartels, these narco traffickers who have basically have an alliance with the state and are feeding both off the US appetite for drugs and now also on all this like anti-immigrant hysteria and the tens of billions of dollars being pumped into the whole deportation, surveillance, enforcement, and border scheme.
Well, finally, Arun, how can people support your reporting? You are one of a few independent reporters that's been covering this. There's been a little bit of mainstream media coverage, but it seems not nearly enough.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there is mainstream media reporting, and there's been a lot of good reporting, but it needs to be so much more consistent because this is really the future of the world. I do have a Patreon account, but I would actually encourage people to support this group, Team Brownsville, Witness Tornillo. These are the two groups that are on the ground in Brownsville. There are many more. And what I would really encourage people to do, come down for yourself, okay? People, this could be a new Standing Rock. You know, if 10,000 people came down to Brownsville and really started to put pressure, and they're clear, you know, when we come to the Mexico side, we're here to offer compassion and love and to help the migrants. These are people who are traumatized, they're in a place of violence. But on the US side, they're going to raise hell. And it's not that hard to come down here, right? It may be at the extreme southern tip of Texas, but we flew into Austin. We drove down the same day. It's quick, it's fast, plenty of places to stay, great Mexican food in Brownsville if you like that. But come down here, you know, whether it's for a week, organize your friends, your coworkers, your religious community, come down here and start to raise hell. Help the migrants, see for yourself, and then go back and start to raise hell where you're from, okay? We don't just have to sit on social media for the next year arguing about fabricated controversies between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. We can actually make social change and take on the Trump administration's heinous policies and potentially force them to stop this policy.
Arun, I want to thank you so much for joining us. We'll post links to Team Brownsville and Witness Tornillo from our website. Good luck to you and appreciate everything you've done.
Thank you.
Arun Gupta is an investigative journalist who's written for dozens of publications, including The Washington Post, The Guardian, The Nation, Salon, Rose Story, and The Intercept. His forthcoming book is Bacon as a Weapon of Mass Destruction. He's a regular news correspondent on our program, currently reporting from the Texas border with Mexico, both Brownsville, Texas, and Matamoros refugee camp in Mexico. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.